preserve character is very good for the tourists, but it doesn't get you bread. You know, that's why I'm glad I took after my mother, you know.
You have this on now. Very good.
Yeah. She always maintained that the only way to get ahead was to speak up. However, the topic that we'd like to discuss now, of course, is the Code Talkers. Now, I was raised entirely in Navajo boarding schools. I went to school at one time or another with almost every one of the Code Talkers. They were several years older than myself, but I do know almost every one of them personally. And in 1941, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, the Navajo could have been, in all of his existence up to that point, he was no more prepared for introduction into the American way of life, because very few of them spoke English. Even today, I always remind the people, it is not ignorance, it is illiteracy, because there have been no people that could have started with 13,000 of them with nothing and increased to 125,000 in less than 100 years. In addition to being terrific, the Navajo was prolific.
You made a poet.
Yes. This is the one thing that especially has characterized the Navajo. He has been able to adapt to any situation. And when the Marine Corps, through a Mr. Philip Johnston,
we spent hours with him in Albuquerque the other day, and I have read all of his materials and have been in the museum, so I have the background. Now, just go ahead, though, and act as if I don't know anything.
Okay.
Well, I know who Philip Johnston is, yes, and I know what the plan was.
Well, the Marine Corps apparently contacted, or Mr. Johnston contacted the Marine Corps. I'm not too sure about that.
I think that's what it was.
At any rate, he told him, he said, why don't you use the... At that time, there were about 60,000 Navajo. And he said, they have a lot of young men that could serve in this capacity of code talkers in a language that was the only one that couldn't be broken. Of many of the Indian tribes' languages couldn't be broken, but they didn't have so many within their tribe concentrated as we had. And of course, I always point out that in 1868, Manuelito, at that time, the signing of the treaty between the United States of America, and there is no such a thing within the country where the country signs the treaty unless it's another country, and this is further indicative that we're a separate nation.
That's right.
Because you only sign treaties between nations. Well, and this is neither here nor there. We have never
acted as
aliens. We've always acted as Americans and answered whatever call was made of us. Well, at this time, everyone came out of the hills when they heard about the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor. They came with their rifles, their old hunting rifles. They came with bow and arrows. They offered to go into the service, but many of them couldn't speak English. And so they were turned away, many of them. But Philip Johnston came out here and started talking to the government officials with the Marine Corps. He came with the rank of Master Sergeant.
I think that was it.
In the Marines. And he contacted the Navajo out here because he was very familiar with them. And you'll pardon me, that bell just tried.
Yes.
And I have to get my train of thought back in line again. However, he contacted them up here, and he told them, I explained this to the Marine Corps. Victoria, would you have
Rocky? No.
Rocky, you can tell. Anyway, they contacted them, and the government went to the schools, to the boarding schools. We had a large one at Fort Wingate, which was the first platoon, came out of the boarding school at Fort Wingate, out of the vocational high school. Of course, the buildings were a lot older than what they are now. I went to school there at the old school. I graduated from Fort Wingate from high school in 1949. I was, so you can see that I was a little bit behind. Oh, I was dying to get into World War II.
Well, you weren't open.
No. And when I got into the Korean War, I was dying to get out. I almost died. I had a brain concussion. I was unconscious 3 months, and that's the reason for my way of talking. And I know it is.
It hasn't hurt your way of talking at all.
at any rate, they volunteered, and the Navajos answered the call right away. They all went into the Marines. Slinky, Begays, Yazis, they all volunteered for this, and it was unique because it gave them a chance to remain together as a platoon and as a group after they got into the Marines. Generally, like with myself, when I joined the Marines, I was mixed up with everyone.
And you were not a code talker.
No, man, but somehow, this was in 1950 when I joined the Marines. This was 4 years after World War II. And on my record, I indicated I spoke fluent Navajo. I could read and write it. And of course, they pulled me out and put me in a radio platoon. They said in case they would have to use the code talking again. But they never did. All I did was lug around an 80-pound radio. But then, of course, while I was in the Marines, I won the all-service boxing championship.
Oh, so the 80 pounds didn't bother
No, the 80 much. Pounds didn't bother and may have helped me. But at any rate, they kept waiting to use it again. They didn't use it. They haven't used it since. But World War II against the Japanese, they tried it in World War I. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
Well, I read about one paragraph saying there was trying in World War One, and didn't they give it up because the men didn't know military terms?
Right.
Seemed to me that's
what. And the same thing could have happened against the Japanese, but we were prepared again for a long war, so they took the time to teach them English.
Yes.
They taught them English and the military terms, and of course, probably Philip pointed out to you, I was very close to this language. Even though I was in school back here, I studied the language under Dr. Young. There, never knowing that one day it would be. I think it's a very valuable asset to be able. You see, I read and write in three languages. Oneida, four languages: Apache, Spanish, Navajo, and English.
Can we digress just a minute here?
Yes, ma'am.
And I'd like for you to say something in Navajo, and then say it in English, just so, I've heard the Navajo language described in a number of different ways. I want to describe it my own way.
Well,
just any, I don't care.
I think it should be pointed towards what the code talkers may have used.
All right, yes. You might say that the enemy is attacking on the left, anything
yes.
of that sort.
I will say is that the enemy is attacking on the left, and that they're coming up with tanks, and I'll use the word bear for tanks,
is
what I'm sure they used,
yes.
And I'm not positive, that they've got three bears, three tanks are coming up with. And that I noticed that they have three rainbows. No, we'd best use something like three foxes, which would mean that they have three mortars coming up with them. Korehei shike, dais no ta, are no wa ten shlazugo, nadas ozde ichi, shashka are sto deispa. Esto are ma yaji kao što arete yoči. Bada hoćem. Eda se bahat nada što zareši ke. And that's more of what it would have, something like what it would have sounded. What I said was that to the left, the enemy is attacking. They call them the narrow eyes. Nada.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
They're attacking on the left, and they're very. The word bahatzit means that they're like ghosts, or it's something that you should fear. They're coming around on that side, and they're bringing three bears with them, which refers to the tanks.
To the tank.
And at the same time, they noticed that they were bringing three foxes, three little, which are mortars. Mm-hmm. And then I said, be prepared for them, men, and let's do it together.
That's marvelous.
It has always been... you can imagine how much the Navajo must have been amazed. Perhaps it didn't affect him at all, but I, having been raised in both cultures, the thought came to me immediately. How come they tell us not to speak our language? And then all of a sudden they say they want to use this language. You know, this was very
puzzling. That's an interesting
This was very puzzling to me, because all the years, nowadays they stress, learn your own language,
yes.
Speak so that you can relate it to both cultures, which is what they should have done years
long
ago.
Long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's the Germans went through the same thing in Philadelphia. The
exactly.
Italians in Chicago and New York.
That's right.
The
Poles,
Puerto Ricans, the Poles,
sure.
The Czechoslovakians. People never said. However, their children were born here in this country, in a community that already spoke English.
Yes.
And my wife is a Spaniard.
I see.
And her father came to this country in 1898. And her mother came to this country in 1908. And of course, they spoke only Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
The mother still speaks very little English, but the father.
Your wife speaks Navajo.
No.
No.
I speak it to my children. The interesting thing is that for years my children ate in Spanish. They went to the restroom in Spanish, and they came here in Navajo. But they did everything else in English.
Yeah.
I think it's important for all of my children that they learn as many languages as they can. I am at home. I campaigned among the Apache. I was the first Indian ever elected to Arizona's legislature.
I knew that you had been in the legislature.
And the only thing that got me in, you know, jealousy between tribes. And I'm talking about the Mexican people, too, because
mm-hmm.
they're part Indian.
Mm-hmm.
But there's jealousy among tribes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one thing that, why we never stuck together. A person reading history would think, well, gee, the thousands of Indians, and
mm-hmm.
the white man conquered it with a few groups here and a few groups. The only time of united resistance of one sense was the Little Bighorn, or... And
yes.
This wasn't planned. The Sioux, every spring, you see, in the Sioux, I just want to give you a little of this background, because I think it's interesting. There has never been organized resistance to the movement of the invader from Europe in his moving west. Of course, today we're all Americans, but at that time, the Sioux, there's the Hunkapapa, the Oglala, the Sansark, the Two Kettles, the Minikanju, the Brulees, and the Burntais. Every year they had this one area below the Little Bighorn where they collected. They had a regular type of government, and they met there
mm-hmm.
to discuss mutual problems. It was just then that Yellowhair came over there. Hill, and he was aiming for the presidency, if you remember.
I don't remember that.
Yes, Custer was the young general that was really going to become president with what he did against the Indians. He was wiping out villages of old men, old women, children, just as many as he could to get him into the White House. Well, this kind of backfired because Crazy Horse took out a bunch of the men, and they were all there at that given time. And so they were hit by the entire Sioux Nation. In fact, I think there were some, may have been some Cheyenne there, there may have been some Comanche. They don't really have a history. But to get back to the Navajo, their history goes way back.
Yes, I have pretty much of that history that I got before I came out. Now, I wonder, you were here, you were just too young. Mm-hmm. To go at that time. When I saw you, when I came in the door, I thought, well, he's too young to have been that conflict. But there are things like this that I would like to know. Of the men who went, and I'm thinking particularly of the Code Talkers, if leaving the reservation and going to a foreign country like this, if it wasn't difficult, wasn't psychologically difficult for them, and what kind of a change did it make in these people? Can you?
Yes, I can. There is one thing that I pointed out a little earlier, is that the Navajo has always been adaptable to any situation. Mm-hmm. He has survived when no one could survive. He, from a raider, he became a sheep herder. He's even become a farmer. He's now they're in cattle. No matter what society asked of them, they adapted.
And now they're even in, we saw them in General Dynamics yesterday, doing these little fine machines.
They have terrific manual dexterity,
yes,
and
they're
able to do this minute type of work.
So that meant that they did adapt better on the battlefield than maybe some other
Indians. Maybe some other tribe, definitely, because for one thing, they went as a group, and that they knew they could speak their own language, and they did this. They enjoyed it. They had
you know,
terrific
Wilson,
time.
That they had a that. Of course, I've done more of the research in this than he had. They had one whole Indian platoon in the Marines. I mean, they had proved themselves so apt, and that they decided to have a whole regiment or whatever. I've forgotten what size group, but now the Code Talkers were just mixed around among their white brothers, weren't they?
After they took them up.
Yes.
Each division took so many.
Yes, that's what
and,
I thought.
They went to the various divisions.
Well, then, yes.
It probably helped them to know that they had a special mission that nobody else could do,
right?
Didn't it?
This
psychological help.
Undoubtedly was pointed out to them, especially by Philip Johnston and the other Navajo working with him.
Well, there was one thing that I have asked a couple people, and they didn't have the answer. I was just referred to in one place. I wondered do you know whether or not any of these men carried out any of their traditions, their Indian traditions, any ceremonies or anything other than what we would do? Oh, I read of one place where they had a ceremonial war dance, and they were asking that the strength of the Japanese be sapped as they tried to make their landing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only place I've read anything. I wondered if you had any knowledge of any other time that they did anything of the sort. The thing is, I'm writing a book for children from about 12 to 15, and they would be very receptive to anything of that sort.
Well, I do know the boys, like when I was in the Marines, the other boys from back east, from all over the country, they would always ask us to sing or to dance for them. And tell you, I wasn't there.
No.
So I can only assume, and because there were three or four of them, they wouldn't have been so reticent, so hesitant to perform for any of the boys, and undoubtedly it was done.
I don't know, but
personally. I wrote this article for Lee Cannon.
My goodness. My good friend Lee Cannon. He's the one who got me started.
I didn't get to see him. He was here Monday, I
yes,
understand.
We came over together.
Mm-hmm. I definitely wanted to see him, but I had to go to a chiropractor.
Oh, you did?
Yes. I have some pictures up
and
here.
And now you were there. Did you go to Chicago?
Yes, ma'am. You might be interested in.
Now, Mr. Howes, he did do this.
Yes, Carl Gorman.
Carl Gorman.
He was the teacher at the Tuller School up here.
We heard about him.
He moved back.
Oh, yes, last night where we ate at that little cafe.
That's
and
the place. And he moved back to California.
Moved back to California. Well, now, how did you, what did you do?
John Benally would be a.
What did you do? How did you use the code? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Were
he's
you
here in town.
He's in Fort Defiance.
And
that's at the hospital where you'd be going. He works for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. If you'd go over there at 8 o'clock, you'd be able to catch him while he's still in.
That's this evening?
At the Fort Defiance, no,
in the morning.
Morning. But what I would suggest is that you call him at home this evening.
All right.
And let him know what you're doing. And that
and
I,
what is the
that
name
I
again?
John Benally. Benally. Here it is, John A. John A. Benally.
Mm-hmm.
729-2332.
729-2332.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We're always in boarding school. But me, because of my complexion, I had to learn how to speak Navajo in order to know which grunt men run and which grunt men it was all right to stick around. Because you can imagine the Indian in the white community, there's bound to be a little prejudice. We're all human
That's
beings.
Right.
And it was the same way with me in the school. Because of my light complexion,
mm-hmm.
I was ostracized. And so this made a great big difference. And become acculturated.
But I really don't care. I mean, if they're
if they
not
be willing to talk a
if they'll be willing just to tell how they used what kind of thing they did, and if there could be somebody there who would, if they want to even speak in Navajo, and then just let me know what they say. That's all.
Well,
see, I don't care whether they're how literate they are.
Uh-huh. Well, I
say in the walk to make if he's not there, then they'll say well he's not.
Pete would be a good one at many farms, but
what's his last name, Pete?
Sandoval. It's indicative of the names of you know what the Navajo.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know anything. Really.
The experiences.
Mm-hmm. How it worked. Now I know. According to what I read,
mm-hmm.
how it is supposed to work, how the teams of the code talkers and how they maybe went on the ship and run in the landing party and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But anything, just anything that would come to your mind. Here, now I just wrote down a few questions that really might not help at all. But can you remember any particular messages that you transmitted or received in an important strategic spot or? Where did you serve? Saipan, Iwo Jima, just anything that you can remember, any reminiscences you can have of whether they're pretty or not.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you remember anything amusing, anything funny that happened. This will be read by children.
What those same line of questions when we were in Chicago.
Oh, did they?
From the Times Magazine came out, but we couldn't think of anything that was we said that was funny, you know.
Oh, it doesn't need that was just one that going on.
Of course, most of it was all secret type of messages, you know how they're classified. Some are just routine stuff that we maybe the general wanna know where he could have his coffee break with so and so over there. But those that are, that has to do with combat operations and certain other movements of troops and all that, those are strictly confidential, top secret. And of course, we were so obedient in not relating any of these messages to even our best buddies, non-Indian. Of course, among our own code talkers, we don't even discuss it. While we're at the radio sets, we use several types of radio sets at that time during World War II. Of course, they improve a lot on some of those sets, and have come out with newer sets since then, especially during the Korean conflict and again during the Vietnam. But in those days, they were mostly crude type of sets that we had to lug around on our backs.
How did they work? Did you fasten them? I read in Guadalcanal Diary, one paragraph, how the something was fastened to a tree and then the generator was cranked up or something. How did
that particular set is what we call a TBX unit. There's two sets, so Yalon, and one is the transmitter while the other is the receiver. And they're connected with these junky cable. And then the generator is usually set on a bench that can be dismantled, set up, and you have to straddle the bench and crank the thing. But that doesn't work in some locations where it's sandy. So coconut trees came very handy. Just swing the chain around it, you know, and hook the generator. It's quite heavy there by a lot. So, and stick the handles in there and just start cranking away. When the transmitter presses the your mic, you know, that puts the juice out. When he does it, see, that's when you, the guy cranking, really have to struggle because you got more strain on it.
Does it take one man to do that while another one?
Yes, it takes two. So two can work very well with that particular set. I remember one place where we had set up is up closer to front lines. That's where we're always located. Those that work with the line companies, as they get the information maybe off the ships, off the destroyer or battleship, or even the transport. So it's one of those things that they teach in transmitting is not to be on the air so long. So we'd have to cut these messages so far apart. And repeating one word, for instance, or maybe several words in a sentence is something that we learn not to do. So it's got to be accurate the first time. Because if we repeat it over and over, then we're afraid that it's too much air time and the possibility of the enemy locating the position. These are some of the things that we have to. Of course, I remember one instance where we had just moved out. We had just moved our communication equipment out. Started shelling the very spot where we were.
Sometimes it takes
where
a little.
This,
Guadalcanal.
Guadalcanal.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a little while for these enemies to locate. Red dart, each trying to jam each other's air circuits, you know, and all that, I guess, for a reason.
Did you do any telephonic messages? Did you have telephones?
Oh, yes. See, that comes under wire section, they call it. They have a separate group. We're all communicators, but we have a wire section, we have a radio section, we have a message center section. And then, of course, we have the big boys who decipher. Usually a message center could do all the deciphering if some of the messages come in on a coded type of language, letters and numbers and those things. They decipher that and then they hand it on to the CEO or whoever it's going to. So in the telephone, of course, like our everyday telephone here. It's still voice, they call it voice communication. The other one is coded, it's a wireless type of communication where key, Morse code is used.
Now that's that, I didn't realize that.
See, they taught us this every phase of the communications before we left, right after we came out of boot camp training.
So you had to know the Morse code also?
Yes.
Now this is something I didn't know.
See the Morse code, and then there's one that it's a long pole with a flag. It's a, what they call wig-wag.
Yes.
One way is dittin', the other way is dashing. So you can be standing there, you know, all day long. Then another one is semaphore. That's what the Navy boys use. You know. We have to learn that.
You had to learn all of these.
Plus the our own language. Of course, they taught us also the English. That's what we call the voice communication. We have to learn the how to transmit message in English.
That every code talker had to to be fairly fluent in English as well as in Navajo.
Mm-hmm. So for these reasons, I know quite a few Navajo boys that went in later couldn't qualify. At one, there was a fella somewhere, he's an Indian trader at that time. Then later, when he came out of service, he became insurance agent or something. Anyway, just because he understood and talked Navajo, he was trying to get him in the code talker. And so after we learn all these, it's just a grueling thing, you know, every day out there in the hot sun. Outside of San Diego. And they give us the test. We go out with the troops on the ground. And then we go into a vehicle type of operation where they have radio sets in the vehicles. And some are in tanks, trucks, jeeps, and so on.
Oh, you sent messages from
yes.
one to the other.
Uh-huh. And then some, of course, went on the ship to test that out from ship to shore.
That was all in Diego.
Yes, and then someone went up in the airplane flying around up there and transmitting to the ground or to the ship. See, all these were tested out there in San Diego in 1942. From about May, June, July, August, about September. Between the latter part of September and October is when we completed all this training and all up here, you know. Nothing in writing.
Yes.
We can't keep nothing in writing.
Mr. Johnson, see, we talked to Mr. Johnson, and he said, after boot camp, it took about 8 weeks. How could you learn it all in 8 weeks?
Well, we didn't know this Mr. Johnson at the time, because we had always been curious who Mr. Johnson was. Apparently, he came a year later.
I think he's the one who started it. I thought he started.
Well, he might have sold the idea to the Marine Corps back in 42. Because we went in, just 29 of us went in.
Yes.
And they sent some recruiters out here, Marine Corps, Fort Defiance area, Fort Wingate area. These were all Indian boarding schools. And Shipwright. From these three areas, they selected these 29 volunteers. Of course, at the time, they didn't tell us what it was all about. They just said Marine Corps, so they didn't say we were going to be specialists in code talking. So we, after about a week of running around here, getting physical exam out here at Fort Defiance, we finally got started. This was about first part of May, 42. May 4th or 5th. We all hopped on the Greyhound bus and went on to San Diego. Of course, once we got there, we thought we were in a penitentiary. All these Marines, you know, cap on, and big baggy dungarees. That time, they didn't have to tuck this into the, you know, just all the way down. They didn't tuck these in, they're just hanging out, you know, it's just kind of shabby arrangement. That's how we started it, and just the 29 of us, a regular...
Now this was the first class, wasn't
this
it?
This was the first bunch.
Well, I thought that bunch. Philip Johnston...
No, we didn't know him. See, he according to his stories, we found out a little more about him in Chicago. Couple years back, what was it last
June, 26 or 27.
They seemed to, well, they mentioned in a couple of their interviews that he didn't start till 43. That was a year later. Ours is 42.
But you had a code.
We're the bunch that devised this whole thing. In fact, we set. Every day, what are we going to call this word here and that word, so on, alphabet.
Now, I can't understand this.
And when we,
you know,
we draft this thing up, see, they must have sent it to Washington for a review or a check. See if, I don't know who would interpret it over there, but anyway.
Well, who was in charge of this unit?
We had a regular Marine... communications officers and staff. See, they have those.
Well, you know, this is something I am going to have to straighten out because the book has to be accurate.
Uh-huh.
And the way I understood it.
See, this is what we don't understand. You know, the 29 of us that went.
That's
but,
the first
But like we always said, a lot of this could be clarified through with the. Marine Corps headquarters, communications.
Uh-huh. She will go.
I'm going to Washington.
They could check with the communications training officers there at, this was Camp Elliott.
Yes, that goes right along
Camp
with
Elliott.
Camp Elliott and then on to Camp Pendleton.
Of course, it's not a house for the Navy now. Should have stayed there, I guess. We were just attached to this communications group there at Camp Pendleton. They were training other communicators, but we were sort of a special because we were being trained.
Yeah.
They were training you with
along with the rest of the communications area. We were there also primarily for this language.
Well, you see, I have correspondence
mm-hmm.
that he gave. It's in the museum now. I'm having mm-hmm. copies made now in John Claw's office. And mm-hmm. here, correspondence between Philip Johnston and the U.S. Marine headquarters mm-hmm. suggesting the Navajo tongue and the
what,
whole...
What year was this, though?
Well, of course, I can't remember now because mm-hmm. I just sent it over. And, but I had, yeah. And they gave the go sign.
Yeah, see this...
And then, he speaks, here it is, and it's in the newspapers
mm-hmm.
also, of his organizing this thing at Camp Elliott, sitting down with the men and figuring mm-hmm. out what words, clan for division and all mm-hmm. of those things, you know. And I have the code.
Mm-hmm.
We rang
our minds dry trying to figure out what word we're going to use. And they kept telling us you got to use something that's not too long or lengthy. Or
mm-hmm.
we went through the military, the alphabet of various terminologies.
And bear, cat, ice,
and then names of ships and other machines that mm-hmm. militaries use, and then the phonetic alphabet. We made that up, but later, after we left, they divided us up into different divisions. At that time, First Marine Division was the only one in existence. They were already overseas. And the Second Marine Division was just now being formed. So some of us went with that as a replacement, or reinforcement, rather, not replacement, reinforcement. And 3rd Marine Division, I suppose, was formed later, and then the 4th and 5th and 6th. Anyway, in October, we left. And
which division were you in?
I went with the 6th Marine Regiment, 2nd. There's 10 of us that went into that.
2nd Marine Division.
Uh-huh. And the other 10 went to 1st Marine Division, another 10 or 8. Maybe 6. 2 they sent back over here. They gave them corporal strikes. Boy, they told them to come back and recruit some more Navajos for the same type of work. So after that, several weeks and months later, some of them, they went in at different times. But after they finished boot camp, then they separated them and just kind of gathered them over there somewhere before they run them through these training. And those came later. But the other 29, they went out and they were the first group to actually put this this language into operation out there. At that time, they were down Guadalcanal.
Do you remember your commanding officer in the training
no.
division?
I know this is something we might, you know.
I was only 16 years old. Of course, I lied about my age at the time. I told I was 18.
A lot of boys do that.
So
then, in order to perpetuate this training, then some of the, did they work it this way, that some of the men who had graduated from the course taught new classes, or how did they do that?
The two that went, that came back, they were corporals after they returned from their recruiting venture. They were instructors for a while. And then,
you remember these
boys? One was James Manuelito, or Johnny Manuelito. The other was Johnny, both Johnny. The other was John Benali, he still works on here. And let's see. little over a year later, they called all of the code talkers throughout the Pacific area to assemble there at Pearl Harbor.
When was that?
This was about a year later, in 43. And there, they add more to what we already had.
Yes.
And
they
revised some of that. And with that information, they went back to their units, and they used it through the rest of the...
Because I have all of that information about the addition to the code and so forth. So this fits right in with the, I didn't know that they had gotten together in Hawaii, you know, at that time. That's very interesting.
You must have had a very large group there.
Well, yes, they had quite a large representation.
Well, I believe there were 380 or something like that, all told.
But not all of them were actually code talkers. They were just members of the communications.
Message clerks and that sort of thing?
Just communicators, Navajo. They call us code talkers at that time.
But all of your first 29 were code talkers. Mm.
And then classes afterwards. There were quite a number of them afterwards.
See, so it's kind of a tedious thing, you know. Sometimes they're just ashamed to talk their language before you. And at the same time, it's kind of a tiresome job. And some of them just switch, like myself, I switch to regular communications.
Oh.
It's voice, English, and this Morse code. So when I did that, then they have to change my, what they call, specification number. I was no longer a code talker, but I went to what they call a low speed operator. Then you have a high speed. That's where you get to those key, you know, that sends out.
Well, I should think that this code talking would take a very good mind. I mean, they had to be very smart men to remember.
It does,
to remember.
But
more strenuous than the other.
I should think we're very strenuous.
You know, some of our boys, they like their liquor, you know, that kind of screwed up some of them. When you get to that area, you're not a good communicator, even using English.
No, anyway.
Can't go out there with a hangover and give her own wrong message.
Have the enemy or having be any of your own allies bombard your lines or something.
When you shifted over, did you go into another area then, geographically?
You just stayed with your company, didn't you?
No, I stayed, about close to 30 months, about 28 months to be exact, before I returned to the States. After we finished Guadalcanal, we relieved a bunch that was there.